According to Mohawk historian Jake Swamp, 145 Totodahos spoke for the league between its founding and 1995, when Mann and Fields made their calculation. With this figure in hand, Mann and Fields calculated the average tenure of more than 300 other lifetime appointments, including popes, European kings and queens, and U.S. Supreme Court justices. Multiplying the average by the number of Totodahos, the two researchers estimated that the alliance was probably founded in the middle of the 12th century. Trying to confirm this estimate, Mann and Fields turned to astronomical tables. Before 1600, the last total solar eclipse observable in upstate New York occurred on August 31, 1142. If Mann and Fields are correct, this was the date on which Totodaho joined the alliance. The Haudenosaunee thus would have the second oldest continuously existing representative parliaments on Earth. Only Iceland's Althing, founded in 930 AD, is older. Scholars debate these estimates, but nobody disputes that the Haudenosaunee exemplified the formidable tradition of limited government and personal autonomy shared by many cultures north of the Rio Grande. To some extent, this freedom simply reflected North American Indians' relatively recent adoption of agriculture. Early farming villages worldwide were much less authoritarian places than later societies. But the Indians of the Eastern Seaboard institutionalized their liberty to an unusual extent, the Haudenosaunee especially, but many others too. "Their whole constitution breathes nothing but liberty," said colonist James Adair of the Tsalagi, Cherokee. Important historically, these were the free people encountered by France and Britain, personifications of democratic self-government so vivid that some historians and activists have argued that the Great Law of Peace directly inspired the U.S. Constitution. Taken literally, this assertion seems implausible. With its grant of authority to the federal government to supersede state law, its dependence on rule by the majority rather than consensus, its bicameral legislature, members of one branch being simultaneously elected, and its denial of suffrage to women, slaves, and the unpropertied, the Constitution as originally enacted was sharply different from the Great Law. In addition, the Constitution's emphasis on protecting private property runs contrary to Haudenosaunee traditions of communal ownership. But in a larger sense, the claim is correct. The framers of the Constitution, like most colonists in what would become the United States, were pervaded by Indian ideals and images of liberty. In the first two centuries of colonization, the border between natives and newcomers was porous, almost non-existent. The two societies mingled in a way that is difficult to imagine now. Europeans had close-up visions of their indigenous neighbors. In a letter to Thomas Jefferson, the aging John Adams recalled the Massachusetts of his youth as a multiracial society. Aaron Pommum, the priest, and Moses Pommum, the king of the Punkapog and Neponset tribes, were frequent visitors at my father's house, he wrote nostalgically. There was a numerous family in this town, Quincy, Massachusetts, where Adams grew up, whose wigwam was within a mile of this house. They frequently visited Adams, and I, in my boyish rambles, used to call it their wigwam, where I never failed to be treated with whortleberries, blackberries, strawberries, or apples, plums, peaches, etc. Benjamin Franklin was equally familiar with Native American life. As a diplomat, he negotiated with the Haudenosaunee in 1744. Among his closest friends was Conrad Weiser, an adopted Mohawk, and the Indians' unofficial host at the talks. And one of the mainstays of Franklin's printing business was the publication of Indian treaties, then viewed as critical state documents.